You need to use it and realize what's missing. Right. So as a user of it, I realized what's missing and relative to what my skill set was. So at the time that I got into it, if my skill set was media and education and whatnot, that's what I would have gotten into. I would have started a podcast like you're doing, but that's not my skill set. You know, but it's definitely what's missing, and it's still missing to some degree today. What I found was missing was obviously an aspect of usability. And that's what our core focus is. Let's make, you know, crypto and Bitcoin and cryptography in general much more usable. And so we focused around trying to make key management wallets usable, and many people define usable in different ways. Some make pretty buttons, some try to remove buttons from the screen and make it all clean. We try to define it, especially because this technology is new and different. We try to define usability as what's familiar.
That is Paul Pooley, and this is episode 7 of the Blockchain Pro podcast. Welcome to the Blockchain Pro podcast. I'm Adriana Bellotti, and this is episode 7 with one of my favorite people on this planet, Mr. Paul Pooley. Paul is the CEO of Edge, a company formerly known as Airbits. He's been in the crypto biz for a few years now, and this interview totally reflects his wealth of experience. It is packed full of great tips and advice, not just advice for people wanting to work in the crypto space, but life advice. He's a very, very wise man. I'm really happy I'm finally releasing this episode because Paul and I caught up back in May. We were at Consensus. That was about 14 weeks ago. And since this podcast goes out every other week, here we are, episode 7. Hope you enjoy. Okay, we're rolling. Hi, Paul.
Hello, nice to see you, Adriana. After a few years, it's been a while, so pleasure seeing you over here at the conference.
Thanks for talking to us today.
No problem.
It is indeed really good to see you. We met, 3-4 years ago?
God, I think it was 4 years ago, 2014, so almost 4 years ago, just shy of 4 years ago over in Sydney. So I'm glad to finally see you in person. Didn't get to see you the last time I was over there in Sydney.
That's great. I wanted to talk to you because you were one of the first people that I met in this world. And this podcast is about inspiring new people to come work in crypto. So let's talk a little bit about your journey and what you were doing before Bitcoin existed.
Yeah, so I guess going all the way back to school, I guess, because that's where the journey started that most people care about. I was trained as a software hardware engineer and went to school in Berkeley. After that, worked in Silicon Valley. I was your typical kind of low-level software hardware engineer working in Silicon Valley at NVIDIA. So worked with incredible smart people solving very hard algorithmic math problems. I think I was in the right place. Always felt like the dumbest guy in the room. Learned from incredibly sharp people. But about 8 years into that career, life took a turn, a very significant turn. And I had to leave hardware engineering, software engineering completely. For health reasons. You know, I couldn't use a computer, got a lot of repetitive strain, muscle strain issues from being at a computer all day, even amidst me being a very active person and always liking sports and whatnot and running. So I had to leave that, and I had to leave that for almost a decade plus.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't do very simple things in life, and I started to realize like all I really cared about was my health. And so I did work. I started working and switching careers completely into both hospitality. I worked at a bar, restaurant, nightclub, managed and co-owned one. That was my first taste of understanding payment systems, which is part of what kind of led me down this path now. I saw what it took to deal with Visa, MasterCard, chargebacks. You know, working in a nightclub, people don't realize how easy it is to fraud a bar.
Yes.
And, you know, the 3% that you pay as a business owner to Visa, MasterCard don't compare to the additional 3%, 4% that you could pay for all of the chargebacks that you get. You know, in a busy, dark nightclub environment, that happens pretty frequently.
A lot of stolen cards.
Stolen cards, cards that just don't have a balance on it, or they wipe out the balance before you can get to it. All of those things happen on a regular, you just accept it as part of your business cost. So I was doing that for a little while. Then I actually went into health and fitness. I started working actually at a gym.
Okay.
You know, and that actually helped a lot with my health and recovery. I worked at a gym. I became a climbing instructor. I worked the kids programs at the climbing gym in San Diego. I'd moved there. And I still saw some of the challenges of payment systems. You know, I worked with PCI compliance and realized how much of a joke it was. Like, literally, just check off boxes that say, sorry, we can't do it. We can't do it. We can't do it. You submit that, and they say, okay, continue doing your business. That literally was what it was like. But one of the biggest driving forces into what I do today was actually, I mean, not so much the payment systems, but actually a realization working in health and wellness that the largest establishments in the world really misguide us into understanding what is truth. Like, what are the things that are healthy for us? How do we treat illness and disease? How should we be treating our body? And, you know, part of my recovery was doing everything opposite of what the biggest companies, establishment, insurance, health and wellness, the doctors, pharmaceuticals told me to do. It just said whatever they told me, what ended up working was the exact opposite. And so that had a very interesting aha moment for me. And I'm like, wow, you know, everything is really, really guided by the control of money and who controls it, who wants it. And in the midst of me working in that field was where I discovered crypto.
Right. So before we jump into crypto,
Do
you have any advice for, you know, we all work in offices and we all doing what the corporates mandate in a way.
Yeah.
So any advice for people to try and have a bit of a healthier lifestyle?
Yeah, you know, I don't think necessarily working for a large company or a corporate company is a bad thing, because I don't think every one of us is built for what I'd call the risk of entrepreneurship. Or even the risk of working for a smaller company. Because, you know, when you work for a small company, a startup, there is definitely more risk there.
Yeah.
And depending on your livelihood and what you're dependent on, that might not be suited for you. So that's entirely fine. I don't disrespect people for that, like working for the man. I'm like,
no,
that's
no,
fine.
Absolutely not. Yeah, we all have jobs to do.
We all have jobs that we need to do and we need to survive. And so I'm fine with that. So now the question is, are you happy with that? And are if you're unhappy, are you okay with the risk of instability? And so I think a lot more people are actually more okay with instability than they realize.
Mm-hmm.
And so probably the first piece of advice is to really ask you, how unstable can you be? Because many people live at different levels of kind of like financial stability, and all they do is they just simply have to remove an aspect of their life that they've been dependent on, whether it be, you know, the amount of clothing that you would regularly buy, how much travel you will do, what kind of food you will eat, whether you go out a lot. And you'd be surprised at how much you'd be able to change or accept a different level of financial stability in exchange for happiness doing something that you want. So if you can understand that and you go, God, I'm just so used to doing X, Y, and Z, you know, I just can't, I've got to stay at this job that I'm unhappy with. Well, okay. If you go to this other career, this other job, you increase some financial stability, maybe you reduce your salary by 10-20%, and there's a chance that you'll be unemployed after a year and you'll have to get another job. Right? So then ask yourself, what will that mean for what you have to change in your daily life? And if that means that, okay, I'm not going to go to the salon that as often, I'm going to cut that in half, and you cut this in half and whatnot, and you don't go out as much, and you don't go to the bar and drink alcohol, which is insanely expensive now, as much, you might be able to compensate all those things that you do like with a happier career, which if you look at how much time you spend in your daily life affected by what you do for a living, that could more than compensate in happiness for the things that you no longer can afford. And it's not that you can't afford them, you're just building a buffer in case that unstable moment comes and hits you. So that's, I'd say, that the nugget of advice for those people that are like, okay, well, what do we do about us that are living in the corporate life? If you're happy with that, that's fine, then great.
Just
you don't have to do anything.
Going.
Don't let us in the crypto world that are saying like, let's go do something new and awesome and exciting and change the world. Don't let us ruin that for you. That's okay to enjoy.
All right. So you found crypto?
Yes.
And
so Why was that interesting to me? Because obviously a lot of people find crypto and like write it off. So to me, when I had found crypto, I found Bitcoin. It was written up by a financial blogger that I'd followed, and he was kind of one of those like anti-Wall Street bloggers. And he just simply said, I'm going to put Bitcoin in my portfolio. And he said absolutely nothing else. Like, he didn't tell me what it was. I was like, I can't find it on E-Trade. I'm like, what is this? So searched for it, discovered it, went down the rabbit hole. And I think I was incredibly fortunate because my history and my background gives me the ability to understand both the technology, since I was an engineer, as well as its utility as a payment system, because I experienced the challenges of the current payment system and how much fraud there is, as well as its economic empowerment ability, in the sense that it removes a whole lot of economic power from the people that have the current high-level structure of the money, the people that own the money today, being able to bring that down to more of the individual level. So removing what are the largest companies in the world and the power that they have, mostly through their influence on government, that all aligned. And it was like the tidal wave of alignment with crypto, because I see now people in the crypto space, why are they in it? And some of them are like, oh, I love the technology, this is cool, I'm a software developer, I can write smart contracts. Some are, oh, I'm an economist, and this is like very fascinating economic theory, you know, which does have an aspect of social impact, you know. And then other people are just entrepreneurs, like, hey, I can build a business out of this and raise money and sell it and exit. For me, it was just all of the above. And so that's what effectively kind of like brought me in and made me the worst employee at my job at the time, you know, even though I loved the job and the people that I worked for. I was too focused on this.
All right. So what was your next step once you learned about Bitcoin and you figured out, oh, I really want to do something about it, I want to work with this? What did you do next?
You know, it's not that I did something next. It's, and I think this is what people need to do. I don't think people should like get attached to crypto and blockchain and ask, well, like necessarily, what do I want to do next? You need to use it and realize what's missing. Right. So as a user of it, I realized what's missing and relative to what my skill set was. So at the time that I got into it, if my skill set was media and education and whatnot, that's what I would have gotten into. I would have started a podcast like you're doing, but that's not my skill set. You know, but it's definitely what's missing, and it's still missing to some degree today. What I found was missing was obviously an aspect of usability. And that's what our core focus is. Let's make, you know, crypto and Bitcoin and cryptography in general much more usable. And so we focused around trying to make key management wallets usable. And many people define usable in different ways. Some make pretty buttons. You know, some try to remove buttons from the screen and make it all clean. We try to define it, especially because this technology is new and different. We try to define usability as what's familiar. Let's try to make what people are doing with, you know, financial apps and bring that level of familiarity. You know, whether you call it usable or not, if it's familiar, it's inherently usable right from the get-go. And then you can start transitioning people into new paradigms of UX. But for now, it's like, let's make it feel familiar. And so that's when I said, well, what do? Well, we launch a company and an app that tries to drive that level of familiarity.
Do you want to talk a little bit about your company?
Sure. So when we'd originally met, the company was simply called Airbits, and the app was Airbits, which was simply a Bitcoin wallet. At the time, Bitcoin was definitely the vast majority of the mind share in the cryptocurrency world. Many people didn't even know what the word cryptocurrency was. You know, it was just, you know, Bitcoin.
It wasn't simply a Bitcoin wallet. It was the coolest Bitcoin wallet because it also had a directory where we could go and spend Bitcoin.
I know. So, yeah, so in a way, you're right, actually. Our very first part of our app, we initially wanted to build a wallet. But part of that wallet, part of the core offering that wallet is part of usability of crypto is where do you use it.
Absolutely.
And so we actually first launched our wallet without the wallet functionality. And we actually launched just a business directory of where you could spend crypto. That was just the standalone app all by itself. That actually launched in April of 2014. And so it got out there. It started growing. We started adding more countries and more countries to support. First, more states in the U.S., afterwards, more countries. But all the time, the wallet was being developed. And a lot of people didn't even know that the wallet was being developed. You know, they thought like, oh, they just added a wallet to a business directory. No. The wallet was the first core component. And then in October of 2014, we finally launched the wallet. And that was, you know, I say simply Bitcoin wallet only relative to what we do today, you know, at Edge. But you're right. At that time, it was a fairly complex wallet. it had a tremendous amount of functionality right out of the bat. It was the first wallet that automatically encrypted and backed up private keys. You just created what felt like an account, username, password. It was the only wallet that had an integrated merchant directory, which, by the way, was copied by one of the biggest companies in the Bitcoin space a year later. As well, it was the only wallet that actually allowed for Bluetooth transactions between phones. So you didn't have to scan a public address via QR code. You could literally be 10 feet away from someone and send them Bitcoin. So it had a lot of key new components. It even allowed you to tag transactions. So as someone that came from the small business world, this was my small business experience coming into play, I was the QuickBooks and Quicken dork. Like, you know, I liked accounting and tracking, you know, what did I spend my money on? And as a small business owner, that's required. So we put that functionality into Erebits right out of the gate, where you could tag transactions and see what you spent your money on, who you received your money from, and even be able to export that, you know, into a CSV file and whatnot. And so there was a tremendous amount of functionality in Erebits, but to the average user, if they're like, what is it? Well, it's a Bitcoin wallet. Right, mobile, iOS, and Android. Actually, we were, I think, the only wallet on mobile that came out with cross-platform functionality at the time we launched it. Like, you don't have to go from one brand to another. It's just Erebits, no matter what phone you're on.
And now you've rebranded?
Correct, exactly. So.
And what is the difference between the original right. Erebits and Edge?
Correct. So as of October 2017, just half a year ago or so, we rebranded the company to Edge. As well, we coincided with the launch of a new app. We just simply call it Edge Wallet. And Edge Wallet carries over a lot of the functionality of Erebits. It carries over the security architecture of Erebits into now a multi-currency wallet. So now it supports Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Litecoin, Dash, Ethereum, Feathercoin, Zcoin, and all of the Ethereum tokens, ERC-20 tokens. But the kind of reasoning behind the rebrand was that even as Erebits, we were already starting to see value in the broader blockchain ecosystem for one thing that we put into Erebits. That one specific thing is the way that we secure private keys.
Mm-hmm.
That's at the heart and soul of Edge mm-hmm. and Erebits. Because if you go and use any other blockchain app, what do? They throw 24 words at you, 12, 24 words, and go, write it down somewhere. And that doesn't sound like much. But doing that is asking a human being to do two things that by themselves are not hard, but combined is very hard for humanity, which is don't lose this thing, keep it in mind, but protect it from other people and keep it out of sight. So you know the term out of sight, out of mind?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're being asked to not keep something out of sight, out of mind. Keep it out of sight, but keep it in mind. Is what you're being asked to do whenever you try to back up your cryptocurrency wallet. So fundamentally at Erebits, we were building security that allowed a human to not have to deal with that. It's create an account like you're very familiar, create an account, log in, while still having full control of your keys. We're not custodial. We're not like a Coinbase or an exchange. People hold their own keys. They're secured and encrypted on their device, but we use the cloud to help back that up. So the transition to Edge was first Erebits realizing, hey, part of our technology can be used in this broader world of decentralized apps, dApps, smart contract apps, which all have a wallet inside of them, but they don't want to deal with the key security and wallet stuff. They just want to deal with their smart contract and their interface. So we were already doing that, and as Erebits, we had announced a partnership with Augur where they were going to use our technology, and we rewrote some of our technology to be like web-friendly, you know, browser-friendly for apps like Augur. And when we rebranded, the rebranding was part of the decision to start creating a new wallet that was multi-currency, use the same code that our partners are using, and launch as a new app under a different name. So as Erebits, we already had this platform SDK for other apps like Augur. And we call it the Edge Security Platform SDK, right? And then we made the single sign-on where people can sign into multiple apps with one account. We call that Edge Login. Now we're about to launch another app that's going to be multi-currency, written from scratch. We needed a new name for it because we couldn't just upgrade Erebits because it wouldn't have all the features of Erebits on launch. And so we needed a new name, so we said, we're going to call it Edge Wallet. And at that point, we said, well, why are we called Erebits? Why is the company called Erebits at this point? All our cool new stuff is called Edge something. So we said, okay, well, let's look at a rebrand. And Edge was just a very natural name. It's not widely used in the crypto space. Has a cool ring to it. It fits with our branding. And, you know, from the viewpoint of the security model, you know, Edge security as a concept is security of data at the edges of the network, not at the center, not at the servers, not at the banks, you know, not at the Googles. It's securing it on our devices. And at the very, very edge of the network are people, like you and me. We are the edges of the network. And so at the heart of Edge is people. And that's at the heart of our name.
That's
it's us.
Beautiful.
Well, thank you.
So you've been running a company now for 4 years.
Yeah.
How is the skill shortage affecting you in the crypto space? Or is it affecting you? How hard or not it is to hire people of quality? Where do you go looking for people to hire?
Right. I think Edge has been very fortunate. I mean, we're still looking to hire people. We're definitely sure we could use more people. I think we've been insanely fortunate to have serendipitous people come about almost out of nowhere to cross our path and be amazing hires. So how do we find them? I'm not sure how. And I think some of the best companies are the best companies by luck.
You know, they found you.
Yeah, the companies found you. You found the companies. I think there's some aspect of hard work. Like I've dug through LinkedIn and found some of our, you know, staff. Some people I found at a meetup. And so our co-founding team was entirely found at the Bitcoin meetups in San Diego. That's where our company's based, is in San Diego. So the beauty of that is you're finding people from the community. You're finding people that are passionate about the same thing that you are, and coming together to build something that you find in common that you want to see exist. So the company's been insanely fortunate for that. Multiple people have come from simply the community. We are building what we call kind of a decentralized future, but we're a very decentralized company. Almost all of us are in San Diego, and we've been able to, you know, cherry pick out of that community. So how we'll scale that, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not a huge team. We're only about 13, 14 people. And you can't just kind of keep getting lucky. But I think what will drive people to want to join you, and some hires that we've had, we didn't pick. It's almost like they picked us, in a sense that they latched on and became huge fans of what we're doing. And so an opportunity to work with us was something that they just kind of wanted to have, as well us wanting them to work for us. They were already interviewing through the course of the years by being one of our biggest fans and promoters and adopters. And so that, I think, is the best way to grow a company, is first find people in the community that have a similar aligned interest, and then grow that by finding people that are a fan of what you're building, that obviously they have a similar aligned interest because they've already seen what you're building and they want to be a part of it. That would be your most ideal way, versus like, I have an idea, I need a JavaScript developer, and hire some really good JavaScript developer. That can work. I don't know that that will work long term or that you can scale that. But I think we have been lucky for some duration of time. Hopefully we continue to be so.
So in a nutshell, not just for people who would like or love to work at Edge, but for people looking for positions in the crypto world in general, get involved, go to the community,
absolutely.
Meetups.
Correct, absolutely.
Contact the founders, join the Telegram group.
Exactly. So if you're a developer, one of the beauties of the crypto community is there's a strong ethos of open source. So many of the projects are on GitHub and GitLab, and you just go on there, see what you like, use products, see what you want change in, and actually contribute. Just write a little bit of code. You suddenly get put in the face of those projects. Like, oh, wow, someone contributed code into our repo. Who is this person? What do they do? How good are they? There's no better way to get in the face of projects than doing that. And it does more than just show your technical prowess. It also shows your interest in the project, and projects love more than anything to hire people that are interested in their project. So if you're a developer, that's the easiest way. Like, I might want to work for Apple. I have no ability to contribute code to Apple. I can't get in the face of Apple if I wanted to work for them. Not that I do. But there's just no way. Fully closed source. You know, I actually personally, right now, this very day, I want changes into Apple's code that I'm willing to do or pay to have done, and I can't do it.
Hmm.
Right? There's a specific thing that I want in, like, the touchpad of the MacBook. I can't do it. not as true in the cryptocurrency world. So simply contribute. If you're not a technology person and maybe you're a business development person, same thing. Get active in social media. Join, like you said, the Telegram group. Start driving some business development opportunities their way. See, understand the company and see what they need and what they want. If you're a marketing person, social media, which is how we hired our current social media manager, start helping the promotion and outreach for that company. Social media makes it available to anyone. So all of those are amazing avenues. You know, to me, the last way you want to get hired in this space, if you're looking to get hired versus starting your own venture, if you're looking to get hired, the worst way is just go and submit a resume. Like that doesn't say a whole lot. Just contribute. And yes, you're going to be doing it for free, but it's something you should already want to be doing anyway. And that means that if you're contributing for nothing, then you enjoy doing that. And if you enjoy doing that, then you're doing what you want to do. There's one interview, a question that I frequently ask people that, you know, they should be prepared for if they ever talk to me, which is, what have you ever done in your field, if you're a developer or whatnot, that you were neither paid to do nor were asked to do in school? So it wasn't a school project, it wasn't a job, just you wanted to do it. And what the answer comes to really tells me about what that person wants to do, what they're interested in. And I've never hired someone that said nothing.
I wouldn't either.
There you go, exactly. Everyone should ask that question.
I'll put it on my list.
Cool.
Any final words of wisdom for the people who are just beginning to understand crypto and coming into it? Any resources
about
downloading Edge and playing?
Definitely download Edge and listen to the Blockchain Pro podcast, you know, for great useful tips and tricks and whatnot. People new to crypto, I think this is a tough time to get into crypto. When I got into it, there were fewer resources, but there were enough for me to understand it. Now there's a lot of resources, but a lot of noise. So that's going to be the biggest challenge of people in crypto is the noise. There's so much out there. So this isn't going to be advice that I've thought about. This is me off the cuff. But trying to find people that, if you're looking for content to learn from, whether it be written content, podcasts, visual content, do a bit of research on the people creating that content first. So, you know, you find a podcast, who is this person? What have they done in the industry? Have they been around? Or are they a fly-by-night, suddenly I'm a hedge fund, like an advisor that has made money in crypto because in the last year everyone's made money in crypto? So I think that's a thing to be careful about. As well, you're going to find a lot of kind of very misleading projects in the space. And this is very tough because they'll sell very, very well. They'll seem and sound very misleading. And so I would try to stick with understanding and projects that have had, you know, a fairly good level of, I guess, perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, time is one of the true tests. So perseverance helps. And don't enter crypto as what I call a get-rich-quick scheme, because it can also make you very poor quick. And so get it from a learning point of view. Understand the basics first. Like, start with Bitcoin. Very, very simple. Many people can't understand Bitcoin to its core protocol level because it's not technical enough. But many people can understand Bitcoin to a far stronger level than they give themselves credit for. So understand the simplicity of Bitcoin. It's the most elegant. And all of the coins that are similar to Bitcoin are like this. But it's the simplest because it's the first. So understand that to the best of your ability. Like, if there's any open-ended questions that you feel like, oh, I don't understand that, go dig into it to the point where you go, okay, that's above my pay grade. I don't get that. I'll stop there. But dig into it as far as you can. And then everything else is a launching point from them. From there you go, oh, okay, well, what exactly is Ethereum? You know, Bitcoin has smart contracts. It has very simple ones.
Mm-hmm.
Understand that first before you ask yourself, like, what exactly is Ethereum? All right, and then, okay, now understand, what can you do with it? Start looking at projects that have existed for a while, like Augur. Like, okay, what are they doing with the smart contract? And then that'll help you understand what these other weird, very new projects are and which ones are worth potentially getting involved in, whether you're a technical person or a marketing person or content creation person. You know, but really having a good fundamental understanding, since if you're looking at getting into the space, is key. If you're looking at just simply being a user when this thing suddenly becomes mass adopted, just like the internet, you won't need to understand it. You're just going to use it. That's how crypto will work. You will not have to understand it. You'll just use it. But if you're getting into it now, in this day and age, there's a lot to be gained from just from actually understanding it. And it's not as hard as you think. All right. So, the podcasts, the blogs, all the typical things that you normally do over social media and internet, I would generally stay away from the very large media companies. Obviously, they are aligned with kind of keeping status quo. So, find people that have been in crypto for a while, the podcasters, the presenters, the speakers, and, see what they have to say and balance it out, because not all of us agree. Realize that, there's many opinions there. And then start asking questions. Join the meetups, for sure. There's some great meetups in many different cities, like Sydney. San Diego, meet up with the people over there. The great thing is the community is generally quite helpful. And so join one, be a part of it, then give back.
That's great advice.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. That was Paul Pui. I hope you learned something from our chat. For follow-up questions, you can reach out to Paul on Twitter at Paulinator, PAULINATOR, and on LinkedIn. I will put the links on the show notes. I am most definitely adding Paul's interview question to my repertoire. And if someone ever asks me, what have I done that I didn't get paid for? My answer will be 1 gazillion meetups and, of course, the Blockchain Pro podcast. I'm here for you because I love it. I love Bitcoin, I love Ethereum, blockchain as a whole, but most importantly, I love sharing these stories with you, and who knows, maybe one day I'll be sharing your story too. For that to happen, get in touch. I'm May Bellotti on Twitter and Adriana Bellotti on LinkedIn. Links on the show notes. Hope you enjoyed this episode and see you at the next block.